the next target would probably be gold itself, which would be around $600,000 per Bitcoin. And then it's probably the treasury market that we're eyeing, and we will have a lot more upside as well.
Pascal Hughley is a Swiss financial analyst, author, and educator specializing in digital assets and Bitcoin. He has written on topics like the impact of central bank policies on investment strategies and the evolving landscape of digital currencies. Today we'll discuss Trump's victory and its implications for Bitcoin, growing institutional acceptance, the potential of a super cycle, and much more.
I have a feeling myself that we could be at this tipping point. Some government will start. I mean, we have seen El Salvador starting with this in 2021, but there will probably, or it just assumes it's inevitable that at some point some other government will do this.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Pascal, it is very exciting. I want to warn you. I got 2 hours of sleep last night. I stayed up till 4 a.m. My two-year-old slapped me in the face at 6 a.m. It was an unexpected result here in the United States. I think many people, myself included, thought Trump had a good chance of winning, but many Americans were resigned to the process taking much longer than a day. There was expectations that it would take days, if not weeks, to count the votes and get a final result in terms of who won the election. But we had a swift red wave wash across the United States yesterday. It looks like we've won the presidency, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, I believe, last I checked. And so it seems like President Trump has resounding support of the American people and have been handed a mandate to push through the policies that he campaigned on. And as I was mentioning right before we hit record, I was excited that you DM'd me and that you're excited about what's happening here in the United States, because you have a perspective being over in Switzerland. So what is getting you excited about this?
Well, yeah, sure. Hey, Marty, thanks for having me. No, what's getting me excited? I mean, in the end, obviously, it's the combination of a lot of things, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's there was one thing that there is, like, at least if you see or hear around here in Europe, in Switzerland and other places, maybe, like, people as well, you know, they were expecting, or like at least they were hoping, I guess, for Harris to win, like, and it was always taken as something, yeah, which is, it's a given, you know, that she would win. And then obviously we there are these polls that are being shown around also out of Europe, you know, how people would have like voted if they had a chance to do this, you know. And it was probably even crazier than in the US. Like in Switzerland, maybe 78% or something would have gone for Harris. At least, I mean, that's just polls and, you know, some extrapolation. So you don't know if you can take it, like, really serious, but still it's kind of crazy, and things just again turned out differently, you know. And that's what I found so interesting. Obviously, it's also kind of, as we have probably, as you have talked with other guests before, as I have talked many times before with my colleagues, again, it's yet another example of legacy media, mainstream media, whatever you want to call it, kind of failing, you know, on a variety of topics, and then also fronts, you know. And then obviously Bitcoin, you know, which is something that's near and dear to my heart, which now seems to be also getting more support. So that's probably why I'm so excited to just be living at this time where all these things are coming together. And also kind of like markets, you know, that was also a big takeaway for me when I was following this, like the prediction market thing, you know, just amazing how like more accurate, I would say, they were in all of this. And just showing that it's either trust the market or trust the media. And I think the markets have won once again, you know. So, and that's everything was interesting, or that's all, like, which is what is interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the way you described it, it's almost like the meme, the European mind can't comprehend this, come to life with one event. What is it psychologically, socially over in Europe from your perspective that would drive people to favor somebody like Kamala Harris over a Donald Trump?
Yeah, it's kind of here. I haven't contemplated this in much detail, I have to say. I mean, originally I studied politics in university, you know, so I had this initial interest in politics, but then have a more kind of, yeah, just everything like reality and things happening in real life kind of drove me away from this, you know, and I drew closer to markets, you know, because I think that's more where reality is at, and I'm more comfortable dealing with this. And that's probably also something why I was driven to Bitcoin in the first place then, you know. So I haven't like contemplated this in any meaningful depth, you know, but still I would say, yeah, it's just interesting. Europe, it's probably more than the US, you know, like having this, I don't know how to call it. Maybe people have lived too well for too long, you know, and that's why they have kind of accustomed to this feeling that government is always there and kind of needs to protect you, and it's just the ultimate authority. And then if you have somebody like Trump, you know, which kind of also teamed up with these, I would say in the typical European mind, the evildoers, you know, the middle tech billionaires, the true market capitalists, you know, then it's this cocktail that many people don't like. And that's why they're categorically are opposed to something like this, you know. And if you really talk to the general leftish people over here, you know, all they can reiterate is like saying, okay, Trump, you know, they it's all just personal, you know, because he's this person who has sexually abused some people, he was convicted, and now the American mind can still go ahead and kind of vote somebody like him into office, which is just crazy, you know. But I feel like they don't really evaluate this in terms of policies, you know, where I would maybe sometimes even say, well, Trump is kind of too far for me, you know, coming maybe from a libertarian background and stuff, but it's more at home in them, and they're just evaluating this like from their personal views. And maybe the poll, maybe you've seen it shared around on Twitter. It was this poll that was taken all throughout Europe, you know, where people were asked how they voted. And I mean, what's really interesting is that like the countries that would have gone and voted for Trump, or maybe like predominantly for Trump, they are all the countries in Eastern Europe, you know, countries that maybe at some point in time experienced true socialism, you know, and all the other countries which are way more in favor of Kamala Harris for some reason are the other countries in Europe. So that's also something to point out, which is interesting.
Yeah, I saw Alan Farrington share that chart with a funny quip in a tweet.
Yeah.
And it is fascinating. And I think a large part, whether it's socially driven by the tendencies of countries in Western Europe to favor more collectivist policy, but going to the ad hominems, I think the mainstream media, both here in the United States and abroad, has done individuals the world over a grave disservice over many years, but particularly leading up to this campaign. That's what I think. Not only was this election a massive signal of support for Trump and the policies that he's putting forth, but it's also a massive signal for the delegitimization of the mainstream media, particularly here in the United States. Because if you were here in the lead up to the election watching what the mainstream media was putting out there and how they were positioning both candidates, it was very biased, and they were objectively misleading people, whether that was in the mischaracterization of Donald Trump or the projected support for each candidate. And that's something that has really been a growing trend over, I believe, the last three presidential elections here in the United States. Is you're seeing in parallel the delegitimization of the media, but also the polls that are used to sway perception around the election, particularly in the lead up to the election. The polls have been rendered completely useless in the last 12 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's something I found particularly interesting, you know, being from Europe and Switzerland, you know, with the time delay. So I was like, okay, but I was following this as well, you know, but I was kind of looking at these, as I already mentioned, these prediction markets, you know, and one being this poly market thing, you know, which has been floating around, and whatever people think of it, you know, it's something which is really interesting, because I read this morning that there were like $3.6 billion traded on this presidential election, which is to me quite significant and like seems to be like a big market that was there, you know. And one or two things that struck me is really because obviously, as I said, the time delay, I wanted to go to bed at some point, you know, but when I was going to bed, maybe at like 2 or 3 o'clock my time, I was already quite assured that Trump is going to win, you know. And this is really because I wasn't following any news from any major outlet or something. I was just looking at these poly market stats, you know, and you have like these two findings that I would see. It's like poly market was way more accurate, like this prediction market on forecasting going into the election, you know, or on the forecast. And also it called the election almost in real time, you know, way before the media did, you know. And that to me is just, again, markets winning over like media and centralized hubs of information, you know, because like these prediction markets, they distill inputs from many diverse actors to produce prices, obviously, you know, and that transcend then sort of these confirmation biases. And that's so interesting that a market is just, where information comes together and is distilled. And then in the end, it's the outright truth or reality that's there. And that's what I found so interesting, you know, that just by following this, you could very well be ahead of the herd in predicting this as well. And it just shows, you know, how the media is playing, or the mainstream legacy media is playing these games, you know, but trying to tell the audience it's a close game, where in reality it was not, you know. And they are also kind of really hating on these prediction markets, you know, calling them out as something, yeah, it's only Trump loving crypto bros from outside the US who use this. But in the end, again, this doesn't matter, you know, with markets, they don't care about identity. It's just people, you know, that have skin in the game, and that kind of we're using this. And that's what I find interesting, you know, again, that this seemed to be really for the first time with such a liquid market that we've seen markets triumphing over, as I said, centralized media hubs. And I think in the future, there will be a lot more of this, hopefully sometimes in the future built on Bitcoin or around Bitcoin as well. So that's what I find so fascinating.
Yeah, and the concept of prediction markets, particularly within Bitcoin circles, cypherpunk circles more broadly, has been talked about for quite some time, essentially theorizing over a decade ago that if we were able to have this free market of predictions enabled by a free market for money, a liquid market with money that cannot be censored, you could get better information around particular events. And there have been prediction markets in the past predict it, but I think it has pretty centralized rails, particularly from a monetary perspective. And I think this is the first U.S. election. Elections are probably, at least to date, the biggest markets which attract liquidity for predictions around particular events. And it feels like this was an inflection point for the trajectory of prediction markets, poly market. Regardless of what you think about it being built on an alternative cryptocurrency rail, it is objectively true that it was massively successful and did provide significant signal to the market in the lead up to the election. And so what does this mean moving forward in your mind?
Well, yeah, what does it mean? I mean, for me, it kind of means markets are just going to win on so many fronts going forward, you know. I think Bitcoin is the prime example with a market winning in money, you know, and that's what we're already seeing. And I think something like Polymarket is really something, yeah, in the realm of information again, you know, and of predicting stuff, you know, which becomes ever more prevalent in today's world, you know, with things happening with financial markets, which make up a huge chunk of everybody's daily life, unfortunately, you know, because everyone has to become a speculator nowadays, you know. But then obviously, yeah, this is something people want to turn to. And that's what I find so interesting. So in the end, I think this is where it's going to go, you know, that it seems like, with Bitcoin for the past 16 years, you know, it's just one big proof that a finance or like a free market in money is so much better, or in reality, like kind of depicts reality that much better. And that's why more and more people are kind of flocking to it. And for me now, this thing with Polymarket was again, yeah, another proof of this, you know. And this doesn't mean that Polymarket will just be going on crazily, you know, and that the liquidity will still be there. But it was another proof. And whenever big, interesting things happen in the world, I mean, this is at least for me where I will turn to next, you know, and increasingly get my information and all my inputs from something like this. And that's what I find fascinating in the end. Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting too, because obviously a Polymarket where you have these predetermined events that you can then go bet on. And as you approach the event, the odds of a particular outcome change depending on the confidence of that outcome happening. But we also have Bitcoin reacting to this in real time too. Bitcoin was acting as a sort of separate prediction market that the price shot up to 71,000. Then I believe like 10 minutes later, went up to 72, half an hour later, up to 73. So like as it was becoming clear on Polymarket and within people who were actually able to read the tea leaves and see what was going on, that Trump, it seemed that Trump was going to win resoundingly, like the price of Bitcoin started shooting up as well, which is a bullish signal. And we've seen this in other events too, not necessarily the price going up, but Bitcoin does act maybe not as a prediction market, but a global alarm system in times of liquidity crunches or crises. I think most recently, October 7th of last year was a great example of that, where you had Hamas attack Israel on a Saturday, and the only market trading at the time was Bitcoin, which dumped, I believe, 10%. And that was a signal like there's going to be some chaos in the markets on Monday.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. I mean, as you said, Bitcoin is really this global liquidity barometer, so to say, you know, and there's also some truth in this. But then Polymarket, yeah, we just saw it in real time, you know, during these elections. I mean, maybe one more point on this, you know, that might be interesting for everyone to hear, because that was an observation I also made. And I saw some other people comment on this as well, you know, that it was actually really moving in real time, you know, as I said, like this information coming in, because I think it was well discovered when you had like these Polymarket prediction outcomes, you know, and people were looking at them. And then obviously as these first states in the US came in, you know, and votes were counted, and you could kind of see, okay, these polls that people had, Trump, for example, is like significantly outperforming them. He's doing a lot better in reality than the polls were saying, you know. Then obviously some of the like really smart and savvy people were going, okay, this is probably a mistake that is not random, you know, and it's probably, if the polls are wrong in some states, they're probably also wrong almost to the same extent in other states as well, you know. And then that was actually the case when then that these traders on Polymarkets, they saw that, and that was then when they kind of were that Trump was getting a lot more votes than expected in some states that were not as competitive, that they were then kind of suggesting, okay, we don't have to wait on other outcomes in swing states, because we can extrapolate this, you know, the things that the votes were inaccurate, you know, in these other states. And that was kind of, if you know what I mean, it was how would I say, extrapolated. And that's why they already knew, okay, in other swing states, even though votes are not counted, we know that there's not going to be any discrepancy, so to say, you know. And that was the interesting thing that I also figured, and people could kind of way earlier settle on high probabilities that Trump is going to win in these states as well. And so that was also quite an interesting observation for me, so to say, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see the trends materializing in the states that are reporting voting numbers earlier than others. And again, like you said, extrapolate that. Well, if this trend is happening here, you have a certain demographic of people thinking a certain way in this part of the country, it's likely that that same demographic in another part of the country is thinking the same way as well. So it would make sense to vote that he's going to win or bet that he's going to win. And it's fascinating. Like, what do you, I mean, just to tie up the knot on prediction markets before we get into like the bigger implications that Trump getting in the office has on Bitcoin as a whole, like, do you think we see drastic changes in how people interact with these events and the information around them moving forward?
Well, I mean, probably not everyone, obviously, you know, because some people, I think these things will never trickle down to them, you know, because they are just not, they still kind of believe, okay, this was just random, you know, and it's not the way I will interact in the future, because I think there's still a general distrust in markets, you know, and that's why exactly then some people were really calling it bullshit, you know, like, oh, it's not going to happen. And then these poly markets must be wrong. It must be, or like prediction markets must be wrong. It must be manipulated. And this is just general, like, to me, sort of or an expression of a general distrust in market, you know, and not believing that something like this in information can also lead to great price discovery, and then obviously to more accurate predictions, you know. So I think like a lot of people will remain skeptical, but the ones probably that kind of maybe have a natural tendency to flock to something like this, the ones that are probably already kind of skeptical with mainstream media, maybe this time around we have another, like at the margin, number of people who kind of, that it have this aha moment where they say, okay, now it dawned on me once again, you know, I could really not trust this because they were so wrong and I have to go look for alternatives. I wouldn't expect like this great change, you know, where all of a sudden like people would only follow this. But at the margin, I believe it's the same with Bitcoin. It's the same with every market-driven technology. People in the end who are interested in living life on and acting accordingly, or in accordance or in greater accordance with reality, will flock to these type of systems. So I would assume they have upside, you know, in that sense, but not like generally, or at least I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I had James Parag on last week, who's the founder of Bitcoin Prediction.Market, which is trying to build a poly, or is building a poly market like marketplace on top of Bitcoin using the Lightning Network. And that was part of the discussion, the philosophical discussion that we got into. Like, with these prediction markets existing, does it introduce the potential to actually change an outcome? If you basically say this event's going to happen 6 months from now, you start betting on it. And as you get closer, the odds sort of become clearer. And if you don't want that event to happen, let's say it's a bad event, like, could looking at the prediction market, seeing that's a high probability event that may come to be in the future, and knowing that it's a high probability, you act to reduce the probability so that a bad outcome doesn't materialize.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably an interesting thought experiment. I haven't thought about this in greater detail, because like at the top or off the top of my head, I would kind of assume, yeah, you may be able to manipulate markets in your favor, like especially if there's not a lot of liquidity, you know, and you have like deep pockets. But in the end, you kind of have to believe that you can beat the market, you know, because, and also kind of have to be willing to put money on the line that you can lose, because again, you can try to manipulate things lower, but if then the market just doesn't buy it off you, you know, or has another view entirely, then you will lose out, you know. And that's probably just with markets in general, you know, because the same discussion is going on with companies. And some people say, okay, can like large holders manipulate the price indefinitely? We have the same discussions with Bitcoin, maybe, or used to have them, maybe not that much anymore. And I always think, yeah, it's a free market and people can certainly try, but it's probably going to be to their own detriment if the market doesn't think that they're right and thinks otherwise, then they're in for a loss of money. Yeah, that's what I would think, at least. Yeah.
So Freaks, this episode of TFTC is brought to you by our good friends at Unchained. Do you have an old IRA or 401k that isn't keeping up with Bitcoin? Roll over into an Unchained Bitcoin IRA and take advantage of Bitcoin's long-term potential while enjoying tax-deferred growth. With Unchained, you hold real Bitcoin and keep control of your keys, reducing counterparty risk through their collaborative custody model, while Unchained handles the tax forms. It's very important. They handle the tax forms. Get started now with no setup fees and no account fee for the first year. Not only is this the only standard Bitcoin IRA where you can control keys, unlike other Bitcoin IRAs, you can take distributions directly in Bitcoin, avoiding exchange fees. Set up a Roth or traditional Bitcoin IRA for no charge today at unchained.com/TFTC and experience true ownership of your retirement savings. Go to unchained.com/TFTC. This rip is also brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. CoinKite builds the best Bitcoin hardware in the world. There is no second best when it comes to Bitcoin hardware. If you're looking to secure and self-custody your Bitcoin, you can get the MK4 or the ColdCard Q. ColdCard Q has a full keyboard, a QR scanner, NFC enabled, has a battery pack. Put some AA batteries in there. Create private public keys off pair in an air gap fashion. Private keys never have to touch an online device. They have their Sats card, which is the best way to give Bitcoin. If you're looking to gift Bitcoin for a wedding, a birthday party, a communion, a bar mitzvah, whatever it may be, tap the card on the back of your phone. You get a address to send to. You send it to that address. It lives on the Sats card. Again, there is no second best when it comes to Bitcoin hardware. The Bitcoin price seems to be going up. You want to take care of your security before Bitcoin goes to six figures. Make sure you get your Bitcoin off exchanges using CoinKite hardware, MK4, ColdCard Q. Go to CoinKite.com. Use the code TFTC. We have a code now, TFTC, for 5% off at checkout.
I mean, now the event, the outcome of the event is clear. Donald Trump is president. He has been very favorable towards Bitcoin during his campaign. Many people are convinced, and I think rightly so, that there will be Bitcoin will be maybe not front and center, will be a part of his overall strategy as he enters the White House again. And so with all that in mind, as it stands today, I believe we're currently at an all-time high above 76,000. Bitcoin is a $1.5 trillion market cap asset at the moment, as somebody who's been deep into Bitcoin for many years now. Like, how would you define where Bitcoin stands today and where it's going to go in the short to medium term?
Yeah, good question. I mean, yeah, it's certainly something you would have never believed, or I would not have believed to be happening that soon. You know, I mean, obviously, you were always contemplating that the big players were coming, you know, that in the end, Bitcoin is for everyone, Bitcoin is for enemies, and that way it's also for institutions and like big tech billionaires, and in the end, even governments, you know. And so you were always probably thinking this back in your mind, or at least I was, you know. And back in the day in 2018, when I wrote my book, I was also kind of contemplating this theory, like many others, you know, of kind of, yeah, when the first central banks kind of buy Bitcoin, you know, as sort of a hedge and stuff. And I never really thought of that it could actually be governments, you know, thinking about something like building up a strategic Bitcoin reserve or something. But I mean, now here we are, and these things have become a lot more probable. I think a lot of people are still kind of skeptical that something like this in the US could happen. And so I think not enough of this is priced in yet, because like it still feels so surreal, you know, like why would the US government do this with something which is only like 16 years old? Isn't that too much of a risk, a reputation risk still? even if you are a hardcore Bitcoin believer, it's kind of like 16 years. That's nothing, you know. And we're already talking these big dimensions, you know. But that at the same time, I think it's the modern world, you know. The modern world is like moving exponentially, ever faster, ever more exponential, you know. And it's so hard for us to kind of things that move exponential to kind of fathom, you know, because there's this important, or there's like a lot of example that are trying this, you know. We can think linearly, like in a linear way as human beings, and as soon as something gets exponential, our minds are not wired to think that way, you know. And that's certainly something that we have learned, like when you go back in history, you know, ever since the world entered modernity, you know, maybe sometimes during the industrial revolution, you know, when banking and also central banking kind of was probably having its advent, you know, then the world actually moved in this modern type of environment where things have just accelerated ever since. And that's why, if I think about it in that respect, I'm kind of, again, okay, maybe 16 years, it's nothing, you know. And it's actually, yeah, because things are moving that fast. But we'll see. I mean, we don't know yet if something like this is going to happen, as I said, the strategic Bitcoin reserve, which would be huge, but it's just a possibility that has become a lot more probable now with a Trump presidency, I would say.
And you mentioned there's naysayers. Bitcoin's only 16 years old. Why would a government do this? But let's put forth the argument. Like, why would you argue that the U.S. government should build a strategic Bitcoin reserve?
Well, that's a great question. I'm actually contemplating this myself, you know, because I'm always trying to play devil's advocate as well and kind of like think, okay, why should they be doing this? I mean, the pro arguments I see is probably, yeah, because maybe not, or at least how I approach this as of now to kind of make sense is maybe not so much from a government perspective, but more from a government perspective as government being somebody who has to work in service of their constituents or like their citizens, you know. And in that way, it kind of makes sense to me, you know. If you are a U.S. government and you know that you have a lot of people within your national borders that are holders of Bitcoin, and they will disproportionately benefit if you adopt Bitcoin as a strategic Bitcoin reserve, then obviously you also have to kind of have a positive regulatory environment. You kind of have to make sure everything is well kept, so to say, you know. And then it kind of makes sense for me, you know, because then you're doing this on behalf of your citizens and strengthening them, you know. Sort of like, yeah, you have the US treasuries, which are the ultimate safe haven for institutions. And maybe, as we always hear, Bitcoin is really the ultimate safe asset for people, and increasingly also for institutions. That's what we're seeing as well. But that's something how I try to approach this. And then also maybe just economically speaking, you know, you could think that, I mean, the U.S. government, we keep on hearing this, that they have this exorbitant privilege, you know, where they kind of really benefit from having the world's reserve currency. And it's obviously, it is probably a big benefit, but it's also to the detriment of large parts of society, you know, because we have this so-called Triffin's dilemma that you probably have heard of, you know, where the US really struggles with having to export US dollars and then having to keep this trade deficit, you know, with other countries. And this kind of just has led to the fact that the US has deindustrialized and just kind of hollowed out its middle class and stuff, you know. And so that's really because of this problem, you know, because the US has this world reserve currency. And if you kind of think about it, now that we have Bitcoin and you have maybe a government, a strategic Bitcoin reserve endorsed by the US government, then this kind of gives Bitcoin further credibility for other governments to also move in. And then at the margin, you can also funnel dollar liquidity and other liquidity, you know, into this Bitcoin vehicle. and thereby probably kind of counteracting this Griffin's dilemma, you know. So that's another thought that I've been having. I still have to think about this in more detail, but this is something I think where it makes sense, at least from that perspective, I would say.
Yeah, and especially when you factor in Trump's tax policy, which includes a heavy tariff regime, which is a direct attack on the consequences of Triffin's dilemma, which is you print the world reserve currency, you have to flood international markets with it, and you do that by buying their cheap labor and at the detriment of the manufacturing base at home. And that seems like that is one of Trump's core policies, is we're going to raise tariffs to try and reinvigorate the manufacturing base here domestically in the United States. And that's almost like a recognition, like we need to get away from Triffin's dilemma. And so you would probably, I would think, need something like a strategic Bitcoin reserve to counteract the forces that will be introduced to the market with the tariffs.
Hmm. Yeah, I would assume as well. I mean, I would have to think about this in more detail, but sure. I mean, in the end, this would be sort of a counteracting factor. I mean, that's just a thought that I'm having. A lot of people are arguing that it's also net beneficial because, like, U.S. government debt situation, you know, and if you kind of trying to reinforce the U.S. dollar by having some sort of Bitcoin backing, you know, then in times of stress, it might help. And I'm not sure if I buy this argument just yet, you know, because the U.S. government, it probably has some facilities, you know, I think it has this Economic Stability Fund as well, where it can kind of mandate the Treasury to kind of calm markets if things get rough, you know, and then again, it can probably nominally, at least indefinitely, buy its debt, you know, and there, I'm not quite sure if this is really something, at least in today's environment, where this would make any difference, you know, to the market. If you say, yeah, we have now a Bitcoin backing, I don't know if debtors around the world who are loaning money to the government of the United States would feel any different. At least that's kind of like my feeling. Maybe this could change further down the line, you know, but I don't know how you think about this, but this feels kind of maybe an argument that's being made by the Bitcoiners, but I am not sure if it really adds up.
This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Zaprite. If you're a Bitcoiner and run a business or an independent contractor, you should be accepting Bitcoin as payment. If not you, then who? If we believe that fiat is systemically fragile and is a risk, the rails that currency runs on are a risk as well. You need to begin accepting Bitcoin as soon as possible. Invest in the future of your business. Create a redundant rail by accepting Bitcoin as payment using Zaprite and reduce risk for your business. I've done this for my business. Here at TFTC, we use Zaprite. It allows you to easily create invoices, payment links, or connect e-commerce stores, connect your wallets or custodial accounts, and be set up in minutes. We can also connect our bank accounts, our Stripe accounts, or Square accounts to accept fiat as well. The time is now, freaks. The fiat system is fragile. Invest in the infrastructure that de-risks the future. Invest in yourself. Bitcoin payments with Zaprite. Go to Zaprite.com/TFTC to get $40 off their annual subscription. Zaprite.com/TFTC, $40 off. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Salt of the Earth. You got to be hydrating, freaks. And while you're hydrating, you got to be getting your electrolytes. This is the best electrolytes mix that I've ever come into contact with. Pink Himalayan salt with calcium, magnesium, potassium, sodium, no sugar. It tastes incredible. My favorite is the orange and the pink lemonade. Go to drinksote.com. That's drinksote.com. Use the code TFTC when you make your purchase and you'll get 15% off. I'm telling you, get on it, freaks. You're going to love this stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure. The debt seems so insurmountable at this time that, I mean, I think you can maybe put a dent in the total debt with a strategic Bitcoin reserve that can only be used to pay off the debt at some point. But that, you need Bitcoin to monetize significantly for it to make a significant dent in the debt. I think now, as we're having this conversation, like, the Bitcoin strategic reserve from the point of the U.S. government could be a strategic move to send a signal to the market that the U.S. government's given the stamp of approval to Bitcoin,
Obviously, they'll be pulling some supply off the market to put in that reserve. And then you have the game theory that plays after that, where the U.S. is doing this. Should we be doing this? Everybody buys it. And maybe the ultimate goal is to drive the price of Bitcoin up, understanding that Americans on a per capita basis hold the most Bitcoin in the world. And so they want to increase the individual wealth of American citizens to put them in a better position.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's probably how I think about it. Exactly. Because that's also the major and biggest risk that you're running as a government, you know, today in today's world. You know, what if any other country, you know, let's assume from a US perspective, the Russians, the Chinese, or who are the Indians or whatever else there is, you know, like they are at some point acknowledging this, you know, and then they're encouraging its citizens to buy Bitcoin. And then Bitcoin like significantly appreciates. And then you have all these non-US citizens holding a lot of wealth in something which is also not part of the US financial system, then you might be worse off in the end, you know, from a US perspective. And that's why I think, because from the game theoretical perspective, at some point, something like this will have to play out. Some government will start. I mean, we have seen El Salvador starting with this in 2021, but there will probably, or it just assumes it's inevitable that at some point some other government will do this, you know, and that's why I think it's the sooner the later, or the sooner the US starts with something like this, which I still kind of see as somewhat in line with where I'm coming from, Europe, you know, Switzerland, maybe. More liberal democracy, if we want to call it like this, you know, then at the margin, this is probably something I would be more keen to see, you know, and that's why I think it would be a great move by the US to do something like this, but really always having the individual in mind and not so much the government. The government would just be, as I said, the one entity, really doing this in service of its citizens. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy to see it actually play out. Who knows if the Bitcoin Act will get passed and the government will start buying Bitcoin, putting it in the strategic reserve. But the fact that it's even being discussed is crazy and a direct validation of the game theory that Bitcoin has been talking about for 15 years, which is at some point, everybody's going to have to play the game, whether it's an individual, company, sovereign wealth fund, a sovereign nation, and it's going to happen. And it seems like it is happening. And the game theory has always been such. It's advantageous to be an early mover as opposed to a late mover. And it is honestly a bit shocking to me that the United States has the potential to be one of the early movers in this. I thought we would be a laggard. And it is encouraging that we're thinking seriously about this and potentially going to be an early mover in terms of Bitcoin accumulation on the nation state level.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you say this, that you kind of had the feeling that you guys will be a laggard, because I had the same feeling. Also, again, trying to think from a market perspective, I'd assume that like smaller countries, you know, like Switzerland, like maybe Liechtenstein or other countries would actually be faster in doing something like this, you know. But then, here in Switzerland, we could argue that we have a vibrant crypto ecosystem. But then again, for what it's worth, I don't know if this is really going to play out well and be really the winning strategy, so to say, you know. And then other countries, Liechtenstein again, you know, it's this really small country that I would assume they could have had the incentives and also maybe the knowledge to pull off something like this, but they haven't, you know. And it's then probably other countries like El Salvador, Bhutan, or I don't know, you know, who are probably now first movers here. And now already we see the United States coming in, you know. And it's always just interesting, you know, to kind of see these dynamics playing out. I mean, it's similar to this whole discussion. It's maybe a little bit a tangent, but, you know, this discussion with MicroStrategy and Coinbase, you probably have followed this as well, you know, where people are kind of pointing out it's crazy. Coinbase has been in the game for so long, you know, And they, it never really dawned on them to kind of put Bitcoin on their balance sheet, you know, and they were just kind of distracted with this whole decentralized altcoin casino and pushing this. And now we've seen MicroStrategy that came along is only in the game for 4 years and is already kind of out competing Coinbase, especially when it comes to its stock. You know, we've seen this and it's so much better. And there you see sometimes the ones that you probably expect these things to most intuitively get it and do it are not the ones that actually do it in the end. And that's what I find so interesting as well.
Yeah. I always thought the US would be laggard because of the fact that we had the world reserve currency and adoption of Bitcoin is almost a recognition that is not going to last forever. And I always believe that, or long believed that the U.S. would try to hold off acknowledging that for as long as possible. So that, I think that's the shocking thing to me, is that the recognition has happened before other countries and only 16 years into Bitcoin's life.
Yeah, I see. But you could almost argue that the U.S. has like the biggest stake to lose. And that's why they're now probably... it's dawning on them, you know, because they have the world reserve currency. I mean, it's probably the biggest, they're running the biggest risk of losing this, you know, and now that it's probably, yeah, I mean, it's Bitcoin, you know, that's playing a huge role here. And then again, probably also stable coins, you know, and I think these are like two technologies that kind of work in tandem, you know, and kind of also reinforce each other. And that way, it could also be interesting for the US to say, okay, we are adopting Bitcoin, you know, sort of as this more decentralized version. And it's really this one part of our, so to say, identity, you know, which is still somewhat, yeah, it's liberty, it's libertarian thinking, it's decentralized, something that seems to be somewhat still left in the DNA of the US. And then again, you have maybe the more centralized version, which is the US dollar, which is also quite powerful. And there, I think it's the reason you see that they are kind of trying to go down this stablecoin route as well, where they say, okay, we want to adopt this, we want to bring it on shore, we really want to regulate this as well, because this is a way to also kind of help to maintain this position of having the world reserve currency. And so as I said, it can almost be argued that they have the biggest stakes and to lose, and they don't want this, and that's why it's now dawning on them, and maybe faster than on other countries, you know,
and faster than, like we said earlier, either of us probably expected. And with that in mind, like how much time has been pulled forward in terms of the time it will take for Bitcoin to monetize considerably by the US government? Like, let's just run with the assumption that the Bitcoin Act gets passed and the US government starts accumulating a Bitcoin reserve. Like, what does that do for the price of Bitcoin, the market? Like, how crazy do things get if that actually happens in your mind?
Yeah, good question. I mean, it's also something that I would probably have to think about in more detail, because it seems to be so far-fetched and at the same time so close now. But I mean, the game theory would accelerate, you know, because I think once the US actually implement something like this and it would become publicly known, then I think a lot of the market would have to follow suit, you know, and kind of have to, everything would get priced in, you know, and maybe you could argue it's even if the US doesn't officially announce it, you know, and it keeps on speculating with it all on the backdrop of Trump now being president and having kind of sort of endorsed something like this, you know, then from an outsider perspective, you're never really sure if the US is going to pull this off or not, you know. And then maybe just to kind of hedge yourself as another country, you will have to front run, or at least try to front run this, you know, because what if the US at some point announces, hey, we have done it, and then I mean, overnight we finally get this Omega God candle that everyone is still looking for, you know, and that could be crazy. So that could also accelerate things, you know, because you don't want to be left behind. So I think now, even though I don't want to sound too bullish and stuff, all hats are somehow off, and we'll see what's happening or what's going to happen.
Oh, I was just about to ask you, like, is hyper Bitcoinization real or is it just a meme?
Yeah, I mean, probably it is. I mean, to me, it's always like, I do still work in the fiat world, you know, I think that's where we originally met, you know, in Rico. I was there on part of the bank that I'm working with. Obviously, they have been in Bitcoin for quite some time, and I'm trying to also further the Bitcoin standard within the bank. But I mean, I'm saying this because I think the fiat is not going away anytime soon. That's at least my belief. You know, I could imagine a world of fiat staying around, you know, and just like devaluing ever more, you know, because it's going to be debased in real terms, and maybe nominally it stays around, you know, and people like maybe at the margin some figure it out, but a lot of people still won't figure it out, you know, and so I do believe that hyper Bitcoinization, yeah, it's already happening. It's maybe not happening the way like these true OG Bitcoiners thought, that at some point in time, Bitcoin is the only currency left and has devoured everything else. I would rather assume that Bitcoin is monetizing as well, quite hard, but at the same time, it's the US dollar through stablecoin, which is kind of devouring almost every other fiat currency on the world, you know, and then it's really this two spiked spear, you know. You have one side, you have Bitcoin, on the other side, you have the US dollar, and maybe just a few other fiat, which are still standing. But so if you ask me, I think hyper Bitcoinization is happening. At the same time, fiat is gonna stick around, at least nominally. So yeah, I think it could just go on for quite some time. And we that live in a sort of Bitcoin world, we see a lot of our surroundings improve and everything else. And maybe for the other people who are not sticking around, for them, things might get worse in the end, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the price increase can certainly, I mean, if the US government gets in and starts acquiring a strategic reserve with the sole intent of paying off debt in the future, which means you're going to pull supply off and keep it off the market for quite some time. And then what I'm just seeing on the 1031 side, and sorry, listeners, I know I've used this example many times in the last couple of weeks, but it's top of mind because I do think it's going to be a major catalyst for pulling large swaths of supply off the market for longer periods of time, is Bitcoin being recognized as a super collateral that can be imbued in structured credit products, longer duration structured credit products, whether that's mortgages, commercial real estate, even auto loans. And you sort of dual collateralize the, let's just use real estate asset with the real estate and Bitcoin, hold it within the loan structure, and essentially hedge the risk of your house being demonetized or something by having Bitcoin equity in the Bitcoin within the credit structure. And we've funded some companies that are going out to the market and doing this at 1031. And if you play that out and these strategies develop a track record that makes it clear that this is a superior credit product, both from the borrower's perspective and the lender's perspective, the lender gets a better rate of return. The borrower gets more secure and predictable equity within the credit product, that it's going to be a no-brainer for others, and you're going to start pulling Bitcoin into these credit products as collateral, and they're going to stay in that credit product for 10, 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and the way you described it, I mean, that's something that we're also contemplating, just like at the margin at the bank, you know, because we're, at least some of us within the bank are already thinking in these terms, you know, because we believe the world is moving in that direction. And something like the US endorsing Bitcoin through a strategic Bitcoin reserve would further legitimize something like this, you know, because then it was probably already the Bitcoin ETFs, you know, Larry Fink was the first genius, so to say, you know, and now probably Donald Trump and the entire US government could be the other final nail in the coffin, you know, where people then kind of capitulate and say, okay, we're seeing, yeah, it's correct, you know, Bitcoin is here to stay. And then also if the US would move into something like Bitcoin, you know, with significant amount of capital, then in the end, this would also make the Bitcoin market more liquid. I would assume that the Bitcoin market being more liquid and being bigger, you know, in terms of size, it would also stabilize a little more. And that, again, would still make it for a lot of people and institution, again, more attractable, you know, or attractive, so to say, that they say, okay, now it has this seal of approval by almost everyone on the planet. It's even bigger. It's even more liquid, you know, it's even more stable, so to say. I'm happy to move in because there's still going to be a big upside compared to other things, you know, because of the 21 million limit that nobody or nothing else has. And then as you described, it would be implemented into different types of loan structures, the credit structures, and just the hyper Bitcoinization and adoption would keep going on. Yeah.
And what are you, I mean, obviously the bank that you work for has been on top of this. You've been dealing with Bitcoin for the better part of a decade now at the bank that you're at on behalf of your clients, helping them get access to it. What are you seeing in the broader banking industry as it pertains to how Bitcoin is being viewed?
Yeah, I mean, I can mostly speak for Switzerland, you know, which has been quite at the forefront of it all, you know. I mean, we've had this, I would say bills that were introduced in 2021 already, you know, where we kind of made it very easy and also pretty favorable from the perspective of a client to custody Bitcoin with banks. You know, I think this is something which is still not possible in the US and might change now as Trump is moving into office, you know, that normal banks can officially custody Bitcoin and keep it off balance sheet for the clients, you know. So in the terms of a bankruptcy or something, it's all safe and the Bitcoin can be delivered right to a customer's wallet, you know, and that's something I believe only like the true big banks can do nowadays in the US because they got some exemption or something, you know, from some folks. And in Switzerland, we can already do this, you know, and that kind of helped accelerate the entire industry. Obviously, there is still a lot of crypto things going on with the bank, you know. Most of the banks are offering like brokerage, you know, and then also trading and kind of custodying of these assets. And I think the next area is going to be products that actually are built on products that make sense. And there, I would assume most banks will move into products which are based on Bitcoin, because on other cryptocurrencies, I mean, they might have been good for trading, you know, and for speculating and put them in some sort of portfolio. Even there, it's dawning on more and more people that most of the cryptos are not keeping up with Bitcoin. And so over multiple cycles, it doesn't make sense to keep them in any long-term or long-term focused or oriented portfolio. But then again, even if when it comes or even like further, you know, when it comes to special products, borrowing against your stack, you know, putting it in some structured products or stuff like this, Bitcoin is the only one which really makes sense, you know, because it has the legitimacy, it has the track record and everything. And it's also the only thing really demanded by clients, you know, like on a broader scale, I would argue. And so this is probably the next wave that we're seeing in Switzerland already. Like a lot of banks are exploring solutions to work together with OG Bitcoin companies to offer these kind of things. We're looking at this as well. As a small country, we can move a little faster. But now when the US actually now is moving into Bitcoin real big time with banks and everything, I mean, this is going to be quite some competition. And then I think Switzerland would have to move even faster, but to keep its edge, you know. But that's at least what I can say out of Switzerland. If things are moving along and Bitcoin is getting ever more integrated into the system, for sure.
Yeah, you're getting me more bullish. It feels like we're approaching the suddenly moment. That's, I don't want to say I've been hedging my, but I've been like, we think about this a lot at 1031, particularly when we're allocating into companies, like timing. Like there's many ideas out there in the world of Bitcoin in terms of products that can be brought to market that are enabled today. Like the question is the timing right for this product? Like obscure Lightning Network use cases that make a lot of sense and actually work, but however, the market just simply isn't there that yet from an adoption perspective or understanding of the tech stack and how you should interact with these products. And to date, I mean, I think the killer apps in Bitcoin are the companies that have had the most success are things like mining, hardware, and then buy, sell Bitcoin. It's still the killer app. You get onboard people and people are mostly going to buy Bitcoin. And so giving them the avenues to do that is a killer product. And beyond that, I mean, we've seen it with Unchained. You mentioned it. We were at the Baltic Honey Badger Conference hosted by HODL and Debify. Those are great examples of companies that found product market fit using Bitcoin as collateral to receive US dollar loans. I think that market is really mature. And I think building on that Bitcoin collateralized US dollar loan or euro loan, whatever it may be, product and making it, I don't want to say more exotic, but pushing it further into the world of credit with these structured products seems like this cycle could be good timing for something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this suddenly phase, you know, that you just mentioned, this is really something that I'm contemplating, you know, are we at this point already? And then what does it mean? You know, is it going to be suddenly and now like indefinitely or like some people are speaking of this sort of super cycle, you know, with Bitcoin because and I'm really trying to wrap my head around, you know, is something like this going to be possible, you know, and something inside of me obviously tells me, OK, or says, well, I mean, if the U.S. should be kind of, endorsing Bitcoin big time, you know, also regulatory wise and everything through a Bitcoin strategic reserve and all these different types of things. Then something like this could be possible, you know, and then also because, yeah, the legitimacy is here, you know, and the infrastructure is here and people can actually use these products. But then again, maybe the more bearish person inside of me is kind of like, yeah, but is it really that easy? You know, what if the Bitcoin market kind of slows down again? We have some sort of maybe not prolonged bear market, but maybe again, some smaller like bear market, you know, where price is kind of collapsing again. Is it then not the case that some people are going to lose interest again? And then these products, you know, Bitcoin-based structured products, maybe there's not going to be that much demand for it. But I'm not sure because at the same time, Bitcoin might already be at a way higher price the next time it already like consolidates and it's coming down again, which also means we have probably a bigger amount or a bigger number of people who still, even if it comes down, is storing a greater amount of wealth in Bitcoin and they don't care. And they are the ones that are then going to demand these products, you know, and so it's still going to be like a some sort of secular upwards trend. So this is all the questions that I'm contemplating. And I'm not sure myself. I don't know how you approach this, but we'll see.
I have super cycle PTSD because that was the big meme that led to the shit show that was FTX, Celsius, BlockFi, all that. You had Suzu, the three arrows guys going out their super cycle whenever going back down. And so I'm have natural apprehension to throw my weight behind the super cycle meme. But with all the factors we've been discussing throughout this conversation, there is a reality which I can see materializing where we do not have the typical 4-year cycles that we've had
historically up to this point, like we've talked about this, whether you call it hyper Bitcoinization or the tipping point, that's one thing I'm grappling with doing the internal calculus, because you have many factors: maturity of the industry, the on-ramps, custody, products around the financialization of Bitcoin. Then you have the fact that it's been around 16 years. Like, is Bitcoin a big enough brand name? Does it have enough brand recognition? Is it Lindy enough where people are like, oh yeah, like you hear about marketing all the time. It takes X amount of touch points for somebody to actually convert into a user of a product. Like, has Bitcoin been around enough that enough people have received enough touch points with Bitcoin that they will convert to users? Obviously, what I'm doing here with this podcast, you have a show, you're educating your clients and the people you work with at the bank. Like, has the information been distilled to a point where it's very easy for people to grok Bitcoin relatively quickly? And then has that distilled information been distributed among enough people? And are we approaching that social tipping point where the brand awareness and the understanding of Bitcoin is such where people feel more confident holding it? And then obviously you have these demand factors, which have a profound effect on supply, where you have all these potential demand drivers pulling supply out the market for a considerable amount of time, which would increase the floor of any subsequent cycle moving forward. And those are the things I'm thinking about. And if the combination of those things is perfect, you can envision a scenario in which we do not have these rapid run-ups and 80% crashes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if we really are at this suddenly tipping point, I think we can only say in hindsight, you know, because that's always only possible, like with more data, so to say. But I have a feeling, as you said, you know, you laid out all these reasons. I have a feeling myself that we could be at this tipping point, because like something that comes to mind is when I talk to my friends, you know, and they have, I've already talked to them about Bitcoin in 2017 and 2018, and then again in 2021, you know, but they were still kind of not understanding what Bitcoin really is. They really saw it as some sort of speculative vehicle, you know, that it was going up and going down, and they maybe held it themselves and then kind of sold it again. But nowadays, at least, okay, it's anecdotally, and it's really my friends, and obviously they have been following me, and that's why it's been dawning on them, you know, but they kind of are, yeah, now I get it, you know, it's this supply which is ultimately scarce, you know. And one thing that I feel has also done a tremendous job of educating people, and I feel like it has only been around this cycle, is this story of storing your time and energy in something which is like absolutely scarce. You know, I feel like in 2021 or 2020 or even before, we haven't talked about it in these simple terms. You know, it's probably props to you guys, Jack Maulers, other people, Breedlove, you know, who have really fostered this idea of, hey, you go out to work, you earn your money, you know, and you have been storing it in something which can be diluted, you know, which and even if it's not fiat itself, you know, real estate, everything else has sort of a tendency to be like that, more units are being created. And with Bitcoin, this just doesn't work, you know, and this is such an easy story. I think people now get this, you know, because they have heard this already, and then combining it with this, you know, okay, I see, I really get this. I want to store something like this for the long term, my energy. Then always, if Bitcoin kind of comes down, and I've seen it in the last 6 months where it was kind of choppy, you know, where a lot of people approached me and they were like, okay, if it's now going down to 50, I will buy for sure. And I don't know if they had, they can always tell me, you know, and it's actions that speak louder than words. But I feel like just that these people have been arguing like this kind of shows me there might be, or we might be close to this tipping point. But yeah, then again, it's just anecdotally, and we'll only know in hindsight.
Yeah, and it's so multivariate too, because what we just described are factors that are sort of internal to Bitcoin. Then you have these external factors, which the debt situation. You look at the yield curve, the long end of the yield curve here in the United States, it's pumping, which would signal that people either think there's going to be insane amounts of inflation or insane amounts of growth in the U.S. that can stomach that inflation. And obviously here in the United States, and I think everybody, many people are feeling this globally. They intuitively understand what inflation is now because they've seen it hit their pockets over the last 3 years specifically. And so you have that external factor of either a runaway sovereign debt situation or price inflation that is materially affecting the quality of life of individuals around the world. And that's another forcing function where you have this problem and you finally recognize the problem. It was a slow burn for many decades, but now it's a faster burn. You're like, what is going on? You can only understand a solution once you identify the problem. And I think externally people are identifying this problem too. It's all long way, very multivariate, but I could, we're trying to back into super cycle here. Like, this is how I would back into super cycle, is describing these multivariate variables, and they sort of seem to be coalescing at a perfect time.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the other thing. I think whether it's a sovereign nation, these credit products, MicroStrategy, that's another new factor within the market of Bitcoin that I don't think people really appreciate, is that these are demand drivers that are pulling supply off for longer durations. It's not speculative traders trying to increase their fiat wealth. Like, these are people using Bitcoin as collateral for long periods of time, which is just a completely different dynamic in the market as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I haven't thought about this, but that's true. I mean, it used to be really like the traders, you know, you were holding Bitcoin, going in and out, yeah, like on exchanges. But nowadays, the more we get these private players like MicroStrategies and these people with huge conviction, then I think, yeah, you will, yeah, exactly. You will have ever more like of this liquid supply moving off the markets, you know, and just being stowed away, and it needs significantly higher prices to be kind of put back onto the markets, and maybe at some of them are even like, yeah, I don't have any intention to sell, because that's always what I'm asking myself, you know, what would I be selling it for? Yeah, just again fiat, but then what will I do with this amount of fiat, you know? And maybe only if you have really something in mind that you want to kind of do, then you have a reason to sell. But if not, this is really a question that I have been grappling with for quite some time, you know. And as you said, the more we have these people, yeah, the bigger the pressure will be, or the less, I mean, amount of or supply there will be on the markets available. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. I made a somewhat tongue-in-cheek, and it was prefaced as tongue-in-cheek because it does sound too crazy. Like, my price target for this bull run, like, I could see us going as high as, like, into, like, the mid, like, past $1 million, go up to, like, $1.5, $1.8 million if things get really crazy. What, like, considering everything we've been discussing, do you have any price targets or idea? Do you ever give price targets or ideas around where it could go?
Yeah, well, I mean, not specifically as well. I mean, obviously at the bank we have been trained to kind of not do this, and I did it once, you know, in a Swiss newspaper, and then like the next day the bank CEO was knocking at my door and like, hey dude, maybe we have to kind of be more cautious, because like we as having
fiduciaries,
fiduciaries, you know, they could be coming back to us and kind of telling us, what did you say here? But I mean, generally, yeah, for me, I don't know. It could be going anywhere, you know, because as I said, the chips are off the table now with Trump having moved in, and I feel like the next target will probably be gold itself, you know, which would be around, I don't know, $500,000, $600,000 per Bitcoin. And then, yeah, in the end, it's probably the treasury market that we're eyeing. And then we will have a lot more upside as well. So I think, not sure about this cycle, but I'll take it as it comes, so to say.
Yeah. No, and like you said, we'll only ever know in hindsight. And that's the other factor that plays into my super cycle analysis. If we're backing into it, I'm not saying it's happening. The $1.8 million prediction was tongue-in-cheek. Would not be surprised, but tongue-in-cheek. Probably not going to happen. But like you said, we'll only know in hindsight. And backing into the super cycle theory, how it would materialize, like you have market participants who have been in Bitcoin for a while, get conditioned to expect these four-year cycles, and then the suddenly moment happens and the four-year cycles just aren't there anymore. And so you're sort of taught over time, it's my third or fourth cycle now, to expect these four-year waves of an influx of users and the price running up and a crash and rinse, repeat. But someday, if Bitcoin does what we think it can do, that's simply not going to happen anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Whew. Interesting times.
Interesting time for sure. Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, and that's what I find so interesting about Bitcoin. Like intuitively, obviously, price is something I'm interested in. And then I used to be one of these guys who's always saying, well, let's not talk about price, you know, because it's not important. And it kind of dawned on me just in recent months as well that, yeah, Bitcoin price is important. You know, Bitcoin is about number go up because eventually this is really what it's been designed for as well, you know, because it is this 21 million limit, you know, and then it's probably, yeah, it's good that we acknowledge this, or at least that's how I think about it, you know, that it is pure money. And that way it's really made to absorb all of this fiat flood, which is out there. And then obviously price is a big driver and something that people should be caring about. Not saying that there's other things which are also very interesting, like technologically, you know, that there are a lot of advancements. Then obviously the whole entire philosophical, societal wrangle that comes with it, you know, and which then again, but for me kind of also hinges on price, you know, a lot of things that I've been contemplating, I've also been reading or writing, I would say, on a book, you know, and we have this one chapter where we kind of also think about how Bitcoin will change society. And it always came down back to price, you know, if price keeps on appreciating, a lot more people will think about it, and a lot more things will make sense. A lot more products will make sense, you know. Also MicroStrategy, Michael Saylor, if he's honest, a lot of his assumptions are really built upon the assumption that the price is rising. And I think it's just fine, you know. But so this is something which is interesting, kind of, you know, factoring this in at some point, or in some parts, the price is really important. In some part, it's also more than the price. It's this dual thing, you know, where I never really sure. Some days I feel like, yeah, the price is more important and I feel so excited about it. Some days I feel like, yeah, it's not important because the other aspects are way more important. And it's really this mixture of both that kind of make it so interesting. So, yeah, that's kind of how I also think about our price, not about like quantitative targets, but more the importance of price and just how it interacts with all the things we're projecting into Bitcoin as well.
Yeah, and it does effectuate this self-fulfilling prophecy where Bitcoiners have a view of the future and where they would like to take the world by leveraging their Bitcoin, not leveraging up, but like using Bitcoin to make the world a better place. And I think what we started the conversation on is a perfect example of that, the presidential election in the US and the fact that the idea of a Bitcoin strategic reserve is even on the table, I would argue, and I think many others would argue, is a product of the fact that Bitcoin's price got to a certain point where individual Bitcoiners had enough wealth to donate to particular politicians and get in the room to paint the picture of Bitcoin and help with policy, where like you may not care about political power. Obviously, the libertarian, many in the libertarian circle, not all, will say that, oh, it's not worth playing the game, don't vote, like just change it via markets. But you may not care about political power. Political power cares about you. And I think this election is the first in which Bitcoiners, some of us at least,
recognize that and use Bitcoin to get in the room, to get Bitcoin policy on. And again, the self-fulfilling prophecy is as you do that and you get the you convince the government to buy Bitcoin, the price is going to go up even more. And then you have this number go up, enables you to build the future that you want.
Exactly. No, that's true. I mean, for me, it was always, I was also growing up as a true libertarian, you know, and then at some point I was a classical philosophical anarchist, you know, really disguised or not liking government, you know, that much, and really disgust, that's what I wanted to say, you know, about government and what's happening. But then as you grow older, I mean, yeah, your perspective kind of changes. But nowadays, what's so great, I mean, I still get to be some sort of libertarian, you know, which is really also anchored in, as we discussed in the beginning, you know, market-driven tendencies and developments like Bitcoin, like prediction markets, like all of these types of things, you know. But at the same time, you have this tool now that you can wield and try to make government better, maybe at the margins, you know, because I was always if you are this philosophical anarchist, in the end, if I look back, my real world impact was probably quite diminished and quite small, you know. And then I always had the argument, yeah, if none of us is like a philosophical anarchist, you know, then the mind of people never changes, and then we're all always, things are going to stay the same. But I kind of backed away from this theory because I think, yeah, it is important that we act in the real world and make changes at the margins, probably. And now we just get to do it with Bitcoin, you know, and that's what gives me so much hope. You know, if Bitcoin weren't around and I would have to dabble in politics and try to change things, I mean, I would be a lot less enthusiastic, you know, if it weren't for Bitcoin. But nowadays there's like this interesting mixture, you know, where, as you said, there's Bitcoin, the tool, it can help you. You can kind of leverage it to kind of change the system. And now we're seeing it play out in real time, probably with this election that just happened yesterday. So that's certainly, again, something which I find quite interesting.
Yeah, we're going to win, Pascal. We're going to win. This was fun. Any final thoughts you think we should leave the freaks with before we wrap up here?
Well, no, I think all has been said. Thanks a lot for having me, and we'll see. I think the next few days are going to be interesting. I hope that we're going to have a free Ross announcement soon by the Trump campaign. This would be another great example, you know, of how we could actually change the world at the margin, you know, because like it would just be amazing to kind of pardon somebody like him, bring him out of government, of prison, you know, and then also donate a whole bunch of Bitcoin to him that he will never have to work again. And so then it would just be like us in conjunction with these people at government making somebody's life again a lot better. And then I would say this is already, has already been worth it, this whole thing that we're doing here. So it would be great to hear something like this in the next few days, weeks. So I have my fingers crossed that we're not going to get disappointed here.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's already fun. This is going to be an incredible year for Bitcoiners everywhere, for the industry. Seems like for the United States too, and hopefully for Ross Ulbricht. Free Ross.
Yeah. There. Exactly.
Peace and love, freaks. Okay.